perder el tiempo con un método que realmente funciona, hazte con uno de nuestros cursos trimestrales. La matrícula ya está abierta. Infórmate sin compromiso en el 91-133-5833 o en grupobaugan.com.
No sé si hacerme una Spanish omelette o freírme un egg con unas potatoes. Mira, mejor me hago una cheeseburger.
Mira, mejor hazte un trimestral.
¿Un qué?
Un curso trimestral de Vaughan. Con los cursos trimestrales de Vaughan, en solo 3 meses mejorarás tu nivel de inglés y aprenderás a pronunciar Spanish omelette, egg, potatoes y cheeseburger.
Clases 100% método Vaughan. Para todos los niveles. No dejes pasar las convocatorias de mayo y abril. No te quedes sin tu plaza. Déjate de líos y mejor, hazte un trimestral. Más información en grupobaugan.com.
Campamentos de inglés sin salir de España. Tus hijos hablarán inglés divirtiéndose, siempre acompañados de nuestros monitores Vaughan. Realizarán talleres, actividades, veladas nocturnas y todo ello en inglés. Infórmate sobre nuestros campamentos de verano en el teléfono 91-133-5832.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. On this program, I'm going to be speaking about, people that I believe are representative, are emblematic, or will help us understand the outlines, the profile of Spanish history. And, of course, we are well into the 20th century now. It is time to talk about the Spanish Civil War, the Second Republic, and the Civil War. I'm going to speak about Manuel Azaña, born in 1880 in Alcalá de Henares. Now, he was Minister of War and then Prime Minister under the president, Niceto Alcalá Zamora, whom he did not like, during the first El Bienio Reformista, during the first 2 years of the Second Republic. Then, of course, they lost the vote, and Los Rux, the Radicales, and the CEDA came into power. And from there, he engineered the Popular Front. He was the, let's call him the architect of the Popular Front, and then president from 1936 to 1939. Now, all of these things, and yet, very, very little direct influence on events. The First Republic came in and it wanted to do so many things at once. First, they were calling for all kinds of civil reforms. For example, civil marriages, not just religious marriages, but civil marriages with divorce. Equal rights, equal treatment for legitimate and illegitimate children. In other words, bastard children having the same rights as legitimate children. Remember that that was an enormous social stigma at the time. Freedom of religion. Votes for women. Universal suffrage so that all men and women would be able to vote. They wanted labor reform. They wanted agricultural reform so that the latifundias, these enormous extensions of land that were simply unused in many cases, that collectives of jornaleros, landless farmers, would be able to take over this land and use it productively, or at least that was the theory. In practice, there were so many things that did not work in practice because of general incompetence. But in any case, yes, this was the idea. The 1,750 new schools. Co-education, boys and girls learning together with religion as an elective subject, not compulsory, not mandatory, but an elective subject. All of these things, such a big change and so quickly. One of the problems that Athanya had was with the army. He wanted a modern army, an army capable of fighting with modern equipment. Remember that the army at that time was in at least physical circumstances, in deterioration. There was a lot of corruption in the army. And there were too many generals. The solution that Athanya proposed was extremely expensive, but he thought it was the only way. Voluntary retirement for the generals on full pay. So they would receive the same salaries for doing nothing. This did not work in his favor because they took that money, and when they were doing nothing, they simply conspired against the Republic. I mean, a lot of them left the army because they were tired of the way the army was. A lot of them simply left out of protest against the Republic. But, he wanted an army which was subordinate to the state, because there were many, many people in the army. This had come out of the war with Cuba. There were many people in the army, of course, one of them, Francisco Franco, who believed that the army was ultimately responsible for the destiny of Spain, not the politicians. The politicians were incompetent. It was going to be the army, based on a code of honor that would take over when the politicians failed. Now, with so many changes, almost immediately there were protests everywhere, and they tried to make Athanya seem like something he wasn't. They tried to criticize him. At one point, he used the word triturar. He was talking about triturar. And I have seen this quote repeated so many times, that he was going to triturar, he was going to crush the army, or he was going to crush the Catholic Church. No, it's taken out of context. He said he was going to crush the caciques, that there would be no caciquismo, something that practically everybody at the time could agree with. And the other things that he was in favor of, un estado laico, the separation of church and state, are things that, people could agree to now. But at the time, there were so many protests. One of the first protests, General Sanjurjo in Sevilla, he tried to stage a coup d'etat, an uprising, sublevación. It was almost comic. They called it La Sanjurjada. But at one point, for example, they were firing guns at the Ministerio de Guerra while Athanya was there. He went out onto the balcony and he started smoking, just to show people that, give people this idea of stability. And yes, in the name of the Estado Laico, in the name of the separation of church and state, he said that España ha dejado de ser católica. That's one of his words, right? Spain is no longer Catholic. And this, of course, again, taken out of context, it was perhaps not the most fortunate choice of words, but most of what he proposed was entirely reasonable. And yet, you had, on the right, the radicals, the radical party under Lerroux. You had the Sena. You had Calvo Sotelo and advocating rebellion, calling on the army to rebel against the Republic. But much worse was on the left. You had people like Largo Caballero who couldn't wait and wanted the social revolution now. They wanted to emulate what was happening in Russia. They wanted to, following the anarchists and advocating immediate social revolution. It was a very, very difficult time to be in charge of anything. Now, on an earlier program, I talked about how Victoria Kent was absolutely convinced that by giving the women the vote, by women's suffrage, that they would lose the coming election. And this is very true. They lost the election. Now, in part, because the votes were, well, for example, the Socialist Party had 1,600,000 votes, but only 58 deputies, whereas the Fela Party, the Confederación Española de Derechas Autónomas, the Fela, with 800,000 votes, they got 104 deputies. This doesn't seem right. How you can win so much in a popular vote and not have that reflected in real life. Meanwhile, the Renovación Party under Sotelo and the Falange advocating revolt, advocating violence, advocating, an entirely anti-democratic way of being. Meanwhile, Azaña felt relief more than anything else. He was basically an intellectual. He didn't want to be there. He wanted to be with his books. This was one of the big failures. He tried to be up to his task, right? A la altura. Up to his task. But he always said that books meant more to him. Spending time in the garden meant more than being in Congress. That he said, La Morcuera, north of Madrid, La Morcuera interests me more than a parliamentary majority. And yes, the left couldn't wait. In 1934, they had a rebellion. I spoke about that on an earlier program. It succeeded in Asturias, and in Asturias, it was forcibly put down, very violently repressed, with Francisco Franco as the general in charge. And, in Asturias, well, Asturias and the repression pretty much convinced everybody that they had to get together, that it was going to be necessary to unite. Azaña, at this time, he was arrested in Barcelona and put on a prison ship for 3 months. Now, he had parliamentary immunity, but the president just kind of ignored that. And, that is really, on that prison ship, that is when he became a symbol for people. He came back with a program. The program made popular. I mean, he was now a celebrity, bigger than he had been before. He wanted an end to prison and torture without
the due process of the law, right? The end to people coming and taking people from their homes and taking them to prison without due process. Now, he wanted an end to, for example, local governments, legally elected local governments, being annulled and replaced by the national government. If they didn't like what the local government was doing, they overrode the local government and just replaced it. There had been a systematic discrimination against civil servants, practically an apartheid in the civil service. Anybody who believed in the left was either without a job or simply ignored. He wanted an end to that, more professionalism. Trade unions were mostly illegal, and the trade union members, the leaders, were mostly in jail. The Casa de Pueblos had been closed, most of them. There was a Falange's attempt to explode, to use dynamite to explode the one in Madrid. Now, there had been a general strike. He wanted the readmission of the workers, and he wanted massive pardons for the prisoners who, as a result of that strike. And people began to listen to him. People began to believe him. His discursos de campo abierto, right, open-air speeches, began to attract thousands and later tens of thousands and later hundreds of thousands of people, even though local authorities tried to stop people from coming. This all culminated in something in Madrid that it had almost 500,000 people, even though the local authorities, they were stopping buses, stopping trains, trying to prevent people from coming. But people came anyway. People listened to Azaña, and people were moved by his words. And after that, it was relatively easy for him to unite the left into a common front. Hitler was in power at this time. Remember that the Wall Street crash had put the world into a depression. Hitler was rising in Germany, and Stalin was worried. Stalin finally allowed the communists to form a popular front. And Largo Caballero, he was, I guess, like the Perro del Hortelano. He wanted to participate. He wanted to be a member of government, but without participating in government. His idea was that Azaña and the Republicans were going to take over and have trouble almost immediately. That this was going to be a temporary solution, that the Republic would fall, and this would be a chance for the socialists to completely take over and run things. That would be the social revolution, and that was sort of inevitable. Now, this was the idea, and the Popular Front won the votes. Before this, all of the reforms had been paralyzed by the government, paralyzed or undone by the government. And now that the left was back in power, all of the reforms were on track again. But there were all kinds of problems. I'll be speaking about those problems in a moment.
Que tus hijos se aburren en el campamento de verano. es porque no los has enviado con Vaughan. Porque si buscas un campamento en el que se diviertan, pero de verdad, donde además hablen en inglés todo el rato, tráelos a nuestros campamentos de verano Vaughan en España. Ávila, Cantabria, Valencia, Guadalajara. Tenemos un montón de destinos disponibles. Para este verano, reserva ya la plaza de tus hijos. En los campamentos de verano de Vaughan, en el 91-133-5832 o en grupovaughan.com o en tu delegación más cercana.
Si tu problema con el inglés es que al poco tiempo de empezar desconectas, reconéctate con el curso de inglés online de Vaughan, un método que se adapta a tus horarios, tus necesidades y tu nivel para ayudarte a no desconectar. Por 12 euros al mes tienes un año para conectarte y elevar tu nivel de inglés. Más de 400 vídeos con claves gramaticales para situaciones reales. Más de 100 horas de audio. Y lo que marca la diferencia, un tutor Vaughan que te guía, te anima y te reta para que no desconectes.
Pon tu inglés en modo on. Entra en grupovaughan.com.
¿Do you Vaughan?
Una semana en un lugar apartado.
Nativos angloparlantes de todas partes del mundo. Uno por cada estudiante.
Terminantemente prohibido hablar en español.
Actividades organizadas y conversaciones en inglés a todas horas. No exageramos.
Aquí o hablas inglés o hablas inglés.
Y da igual las veces que te lo contemos.
Hasta que no lo vivas no sabrás que Vaughan Town te va a quitar el miedo al inglés para siempre.
Lo que pasa en Vaughan Town no se puede contar.
Tienes que vivirlo.
Ven a Vaughan Town.
Más información en grupovaughan.com.
¿Do you Vaughan?
40 años contando con el talento de unos profesores únicos. 40 años de ideas, de ilusión, de innovación, de enseñanza diferente. Gracias por formar parte de Vaughan.
Welcome back. I was speaking about Azaña and what happened in 1936, after the elections in February, in 1936. Well, one of the first items on the agenda was to deshacerse, to get rid of Alcalá Zamora as president, because Azaña considered him the worst enemy of the Republic. Remember that when Azaña was in prison, Alcalá Zamora didn't do anything to help him. Although he had parliamentary immunity. Well, in any case, they did get rid of Alcalá Zamora. And who was going to be president after that? Well, it was Azaña. Azaña himself. He didn't really want to, but he did. And after that, well, after that, things began to deteriorate because this was the Jaula de Oro, right? It was the gilded cage. He was not as effective as being president. Things were out of control. On the streets, the streets were filled with gangsters, the left and the right, but of course the whole Falange was doing everything it could to cause social instability. There were 270 deaths on the street. Between February and July, when the generals rose up. Meanwhile, the generals were conspiring. They were conspiring with politicians. Everybody knew this. What could they do? Some of the most obvious, I mean, Sanjurjo was in Lisbon. They sent Mola to Navarra. They sent Franco to Canarias. They sent Godet to Baleares. But they knew they were conspiring. And it was like putting your head in the sand, como un avestruz, like an ostrich, to let that continue. But again, that's what they did. These deaths in the streets, somebody killed José Castillo in Madrid. José Castillo, a member of the assault guard, who was well known. And that started a revenge killing, and they thought, who could we kill? How about Gil Robles? They went to his house. He wasn't home. So they went to Calvo Sotelo's house, and he was home, and they killed him. Now, that death, that assassination, one among many, but that particular assassination, that's what convinced Franco to join the rebels. And Franco, of course, had waited until the last possible minute However, everybody respected him, so everybody waited for him. When he joined the rebels, it was on. And in July, after they rose up, you can imagine Athanya in a state of disbelief, doing everything he could to prevent a civil war. In Madrid, the Cuartel de la Montaña, Monte Príncipe Pío, where the Templo de Bot is today, they had orders to rise up, but the general in charge, Fanjul, thought it would be better to wait, and well, shooting started. The Guardia Civil and loyal military, it was an absolute slaughter. About 900 people died. All over Spain, church burnings, all sorts of things, revenge killings, and Athanya could not believe it. He tried to call the generals. He tried to get international mediation. He tried after Franco came in, was going to attack Madrid. The government panicked. They moved. They were going to move to Barcelona, but inexplicably they changed their mind and moved to Valencia. But Athanya was in Barcelona, and there he became entirely irrelevant. He moved to Montserrat, the Abadía de Montserrat, for a while. That's how irrelevant he was. He kept telling people that in a civil war, nobody wins. He said, it is impossible to triumph over our compatriots. He said that after this war is over, when your president lifts his victory trophy, his heart will break. In other words, a lose-lose situation. And he could not stand the people in the Republic who were deserting, who were going over to the other side, or who were going into exile. After a while, the situation on the street had deteriorated. In Madrid, there were checas. There were informal prisons. Anything could happen. If your neighbor didn't like you, he could denounce you or do it himself with impunity. We're talking about thousands of people dying, and a lot of people just preferred exile. In any case, he said one of, you know, no matter how many of the 24 million Spaniards die in the war, there will be many survivors, and they will have the need and obligation to keep on living together, or the nation will die. That's what he kept saying. He couldn't stand it anymore. He left. He went into exile. Negrín, who was president at that time, called him, told him to come back, ordered him to come back. But he was just too tired. He had been irrelevant. He had been a figurehead for too long and escaped into exile. Now, once in exile, he didn't live very long. He lived in relative obscurity for the rest of his life, 1 year, in southern France, with books, I suppose, until 1940. One of the things he said, one of the truest things he said, is that 100 years from now, most people will not know who Franco and I were. All right, I will take a break now. I'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the second part of the program.
¿Qué es eso?
Una amapola.
¿Y eso?
Otra amapola.
Este verano, apúntalos a un campamento en el que se divierten de verdad. Apúntalos a un campamento de inglés Vaughan. Tenemos un montón de opciones. Campamentos en plena naturaleza, campamentos de artes escénicas, campamentos multiaventura y mucho más. Y todo en inglés y para todas las edades. Llámanos al 91-133-5832 y te informaremos sin ningún compromiso. 91-133-5832.
Campamentos de inglés sin salir de España. Tus hijos hablarán inglés divirtiéndose, siempre acompañados de nuestros monitores Vaughan. Realizarán talleres, actividades, veladas nocturnas y todo ello en inglés. Infórmate sobre nuestros campamentos de verano en el teléfono 91-133-5832.
Que tus hijos se aburren en el campamento de verano es porque no los has enviado con Vaughan. Porque si buscas un campamento en el que se diviertan, pero de verdad, donde además hablen en inglés todo el rato, tráelos a nuestros campamentos de verano Vaughan en España. Ávila, Cantabria, Valencia, Guadalajara. Tenemos un montón de destinos disponibles. Para este verano, reserva ya la plaza de tus hijos en los campamentos de verano de Vaughan en el 91-133-5832 o en grupovaughan.com o en tu delegación más cercana. Esfuerzo e ilusión, innovando, adaptándonos a todas tus necesidades. 40 años creciendo juntos. Gracias por formar parte de Vaughan.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is Western Civilization, from Mesopotamia to Silicon Valley. I'm your host. My name is Guy Williams, and on the first part of the program, I was speaking about the life and times of Manuel Azaña. And on the second part of the program, why not? I'm going to speak about Francisco Franco and his life and times. If you want a good idea of who Franco really was, I'm pretty sure that the best thing you can do is to watch the film he made of his life. He was the author of the film Raza. It came out, if I remember correctly, in 1940. And there you get to see his family, a version of his family, but it's obviously his family in Galicia. Now, he took a little bit of license. His real father was a leftist. His real father was a drinker and a womanizer. And his real father left his mother and hurt his mother badly. He didn't like his father. His older brother, Ramon, a hero, an aviator, a celebrity. They say that whenever they asked Franco's father, tell us about your son, he said, well, Ramon. And no, the other son. Oh, my other son. In other words, Franco and his father and his brother were estranged. And in the film, you can see why. By the way, they say that his older brother was a Mason, a Freemason, a member of a Masonic order, which might be the reason that Franco, all of his life, he believed that Masons were everything that was wrong with Spain had come from the Napoleonic Wars, which brought Masonry to Spain, and that the Masons were behind practically everything bad that had ever happened to Spain. In any case, you get to see it all in Raza. By the way, you can imagine the director, José Luis Sanz de Heredia, with Franco looking over his shoulder every day. Finally, when Franco saw the film, the completed film, he said, usted ha cumplido. You did your duty. And that was, yeah. In the film, the person, the surrogate for Franco, the one who represents Franco, that was Alfredo Mayo.
And Alfredo Mayo at the time, it's like Brad Pitt. If you make a movie about your own life, why not? Brad Pitt can be the star. In any case, from relatively obscure beginnings in Galicia, of Franco, physically small, with a high voice, and everybody in his childhood thinking that he looked a little feminine. Well, in 1912, he went to Morocco, and his formative years were going to be in Morocco. And in Morocco, he was a different person. Morocco at that time, you can imagine, in the army, you obey and you command. You follow a code of honor. And everybody says, yes, he was fearless. There's never been a record that he showed fear in combat and great personal danger. Anybody else would be afraid. Franco never, he might have been afraid, but he never showed fear of ever any time in his life. In any case, his courage on the battlefield and his competence made him the youngest captain, the youngest major, the youngest general, not just in Spanish history, but the youngest general in Europe at that time. Now, naturally, this made enemies in the army. At the time, the army was absolutely divided between officers who believed on promotion due to merit and other officers who believed in promotion for seniority, right? The escalafón, the promoción. There was a lot of conflict in the army, and of course, Franco would have had enemies there. But by the way, the army was totally corrupt at that time, with lots of people taking money on the side from supplies, from munitions. That's why they were so bad at fighting. That's why, for example, the Anuel happened, the battle that was lost in 1922. But yes, evidently that didn't bother him. The simultaneously being surrounded by a kind of corrupt system and yet a personal code of honor. In any case, that is just one of the many ambiguities that you see. Later on in the Franco regime, he seemed to be, all the people around him were pocketing money. There was embezzlement. It was widespread. Everybody on his side was getting rich. Not everybody, but many, many people were. And large fortunes were made. And it didn't seem to bother him. In any case, back in Morocco, yes, part of the regulares indígenas, part of the tercio extranjero, soldiers that mean business. He was very adept at using the Berber tribes, one against the other, at playing with the loyalty of the Berber tribes. And yes, they say that these were lessons that he was able to learn later on, because he had an art of being able to balance conflicting interests. Now, this gave him command. He always, during the entire dictatorship, he called what he was doing el mando, command. He believed, right, giving orders, essentially. This wasn't politics. Politics is give and take. Politics is mutual favors. Politics is self-doubt. Franco never had self-doubt. Politics, knowing that you might be wrong, knowing that you're doing a good thing for a bad reason, or that many people do bad things for good reasons. There are unintended consequences. Politics has a real idea of its own limitations and fallibility. So Franco came from the army. This was not politics. One of Franco's statements, he said, be like me. Stay out, no te metes. Be like me. Don't get involved in politics. So to somebody like that, if you disagree with him, it's possibly because you don't understand, and so he will repeat. But if you really disagree with him, that's insubordination. And there is no place for insubordination. Now, he had no real love for the Second Republic, but at the same time, he did not want to, well, after the San Juan, he didn't want to be part of something that failed. And so, yes, he did not, no se mojó, right? He sat on the fence. That's what we say in English. He sat on the fence until after Calvo Sotelo was assassinated. Other people who could possibly have got in the way of his command, for example, Sanjurjo, who was nominally in charge, they sent a very small plane to pick Sanjurjo up. Sanjurjo was bringing gold. The plane crashed and burned in Lisbon, so Sanjurjo was not going to lead the rebellion. General Mola, an aviation accident, he was not going to lead the rebellion. Capellano was not. José Antonio, the Falange, was taken prisoner and killed. And eventually, yes, it was Franco balancing the different familias, right? Members of the church, members of the army, monarchists, members of the oligarchy, right? The rich, the nobles, and of course the Falange, which he almost immediately merged with the Carlists and bureaucratized to make them inoffensive. On Monday, two days ago, I was speaking about the Sección Femenina and how they were practically the only people that were not taking money. Everybody else seems to have. In any case, he didn't have any real respect for them. I mean, at one point, everything was merged into El Movimiento, and at one point, Franco called them the CLA. Right, the ones that follow me around and clap. Well, he was going to change. Initially, taking advice from the Germans. The Germans had come out of the First World War with a hatred of trench warfare. They wanted to do anything to avoid trench warfare. And so they were going to use a lot more planes, even if this meant killing civilians, what they did in Guernica, what they did in Madrid, dropping bombs on civilians. They were going to use their tanks that could easily go over any trench. This was going to be a new kind of warfare, and a war that could win battles and win the war very quickly. The Germans called it Blitz, which is lightning, right? Relampago. Blitzkrieg, lightning war. La guerra relampago. Franco didn't really want a blitzkrieg and argued with the German advisors. And, for example, they were heading toward Madrid, and They could have taken Madrid. Franco wanted to go to Toledo first because the Alcázar was resisting heroically, and he wanted... That, of course, was very good public relations. But at the same time, it slowed down the approach to Madrid, and ultimately it made all of those tanks, for example, when the tanks were coming close to Madrid, they destroyed the bridges across the Manzanares. And believe it or not, those tanks could not cross the Manzanares. And so in Madrid, what you had was trench warfare, just what the Germans wanted to avoid. Although they started bombing civilians and bombed. After 3 years of this, of course, everybody in Madrid knew how to live underground, and there were tunnels everywhere. But at first, I mean, this was the first time in history. If Picasso's Guernica is so touching, if the whole thing caused outrage, it's because it was the first time. I mean, 7 years later, the United States can use an atomic bomb on Hiroshima, and it's not going to cause as much shock to people as Guernica did, because it was a market town on market day, and nobody there was a soldier. Anyway, the war was prolonged, and this is evidently what Franco wanted. The systematic elimination of the enemy and a sort of apartheid into winners who knew they were winners and losers who were never allowed to forget that they were losers. You had executions, you had prisons, labor camps, many, many people in exile. But you have to remember that Franco himself always believed sincerely that he was a moderate, that he was reasonable, that he was the best thing that could have possibly happened. Any alternative would have been worse. And he denied again and again that he was a dictator. He said, it would be infantile to call me a dictator. He said that, I have about the same power in Spain that the Constitution gives to the American president. He never doubted himself for a minute, but believed at every moment that he was doing the right thing. Just a few minutes ago, I was talking about Azaña. Azaña was practically paralyzed by self-doubt, by the horror, and by the sorts of things that he wasn't able to prevent. Well, Franco, never. Never. All right, I'm going to take a short break. I'll be back in just a minute.
En los bosques de este singular paraje crece la Bauganea inglesifolia. La exuberante belleza de esta planta llega a su culmen cuando en marzo brotan sus hermosas flores. 3 meses de germinación dan lugar a esta flor de inigualable hermosura, un milagro de la...
¿Quieres que tu inglés también florezca esta primavera? Entonces deberías empezar ahora. Apúntate a nuestros cursos trimestrales. En solo 3 meses perfeccionarás tu inglés. Sí, sí, si te apuntas ahora, para marzo hablarás inglés. Cursos trimestrales de Vaughan. Infórmate ya en el 91-133-5833 o en grupovaughan.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
¿Y tú qué has hecho en los 3 últimos meses? Si no has hecho nada por tu inglés, ahora es el momento. Apúntate a nuestros cursos trimestrales 100% método Vaughan. Clases 100% orales en grupos reducidos. La matrícula ya está abierta para todos los niveles. Así que no pierdas ni un segundo más e infórmate ahora en el 91-133-5833 o en grupovaughan.com. En los bosques de este singular paraje crece la Bauganea inglesifolia. La exuberante belleza de esta planta llega a su culmen cuando en marzo brotan sus hermosas...
¡Ay, qué tonto! Lo voy a poner en inglés a ver si me entero de algo.
When in March, its beautiful flowers bloom. 3 months of germination result in this flower of unequaled beauty.
3 meses y luego, ¡pum! Ya está.
¡Qué fácil!
¿Quieres que tu inglés también florezca esta primavera? Entonces deberías empezar ahora. Apúntate a nuestros cursos trimestrales. En solo 3 meses perfeccionarás tu inglés. Sí, sí, si te apuntas ahora, para marzo hablarás inglés. Cursos trimestrales de Vaughan. Infórmate ya en el 91-133-5833 o en grupovaughan.com. ¿Do you Vaughan?
Estás escuchando Vaughan Radio.
Welcome back. I was speaking about Francisco Franco and one of his big convictions. One of his big convictions was that time was on his side. He was never in a hurry. He believed that problems can solve themselves with time. And certainly one of his problems did. He was initially enthusiastic about the Axis powers. He met with Hitler in Hendaya, but that didn't go well for some reason. And after that, there was a sort of a wait-and-see attitude. He understood the military implications that Germany was not going to win that war without access to petroleum. That's what Stalingrad was about. Stalingrad was an attempt to get to Baku in Azerbaijan and get that petroleum. Well, they didn't get it. And in any case, his enthusiasm, at the time he was listening to his cuñado, his brother-in-law, el cuñadísimo, the man who had married his wife's sister, Serrano Suñer, who was enthusiastic about everything German and really wanted to transform Spain into a Nazi state. However, Serrano Suñer did things in his private life that made his wife unhappy. Made his wife unhappy, made his wife's sister unhappy, and his wife's sister made Franco, Franco's wife made him unhappy. I mean, Serrano Suñer, his behavior began to be a little bit scandalous, and maybe for that reason, Spain did not go into the Second World War with the Axis powers. In any case, this wait-and-see attitude helped him, because the Cold War was the best thing that could have happened. Cooperation with the United States, cooperation at every level. At the highest level, there were church, the Catholic Church, the Opus Dei, scholarships, right, becas to study in the United States, direct foreign investment. And then when they were constructing the bases, the military bases in Spain, this was the first time that you needed massive construction projects, infrastructure, to specifications on such a big level. Many people don't know that one of Spain's greatest industries today is infrastructure. Of the 10 largest infrastructure companies in the world, I think four of them are Spanish. You hear about these things, but nobody ever takes them into account. This is one of Spain's great triumphs in the 21st century, and a lot of it came from building the bases back in the 1950s. Prosperity came in the 1960s. Franco was convinced that the United States had imposed democracy on Germany and on Italy in order to weaken them. And so when Germany and Italy began to become prosperous, Franco was convinced that this was in spite of democracy, not because of democracy, that they would be much better as dictatorships. And well, in any case, he and his advisors were intelligent enough not to stand in the way, no estorbar, when Spain was becoming richer, when people could finally get electrodomésticos, right? When they could get home appliances, and when, well, a middle class, for the first time in Spain, a middle class. Now, later on in life, you had a Franco that was more and more like a king. Bajo Palio, right? He insisted on the royal canopy. He insisted on the royal march being played when he and his wife were there. The song that they play for the king, they played for Franco. Franco created noble titles. He awarded nobility like a king would. And, yeah, lived very much like a king. Of course, he didn't drink. He didn't. There were a lot of things that he didn't do. But many of the times when he went on hunting trips, you can imagine having having a large estate and then being chosen by Franco for a hunting trip. That was absolutely guaranteed. The people you could invite, the people, because big deals were made at those hunting trips, and there were many of them. People would fight, literally fight, to have the privilege of getting Franco there to hunt. But again, happy with corruption all around him, like in the army in the early days, using a code of honor, but tolerating corruption. There were scandals in the 57, the Falange and the Opus Dei were fighting. He was comfortable with that. They were pressuring him to bring back the Bourbon dynasty, and he kept saying, he told Fraga, "No he quitado a nadie la corona. I haven't taken the crown from anyone. I found it in the street, and I am cleaning it, and I will give it back to the person who can best wear it." And so, yes, eventually, Juan Carlos, he had to pretend, fingir, he had to pretend to go along with what Franco was saying for the longest time. In any case, Franco, again, when he... it's possible he was afraid of death. Carrero Blanco, who had been almost his valido, almost his the one working behind the scenes, working without stop, like, I don't know, El Conde Duque de Olivares, but more competent. Carrero Blanco assassinated. And Franco did not attend the funeral. He did not attend his father's funeral. Franco kept Santa Teresa's arm and other talismans, other relics. This is possibly because he was afraid of death, but of course death was coming. He said, atado y bien atado, right, for Spain. When Carrero Blanco died, Franco said, no hay mal que por bien no venga, which is impossible to interpret, impossible to understand. What did he mean by that? This was part of his style, a style that, I'm sorry, I have Gallego friends who do this. They will answer a question with a question. Right? They will pretend to agree with you, but not take sides until you've stopped speaking. And then, well, in any case, Azaña said, 100 years from now, most people will not know who Franco and I were. And I think Azaña was right. In any case, I've run out of time. Thank you for listening, and please listen to my next program. Thank you.